descriptions of those events, the sea is probably one of the most dangerous places to be in the world.
I mean, it's good. At the age of 17, on a destroyer escort, I was a seaman recruit in the Navy Reserve on that very water. And we got into a storm with a destroyer escort, a DE they call them, and as small as it could be. And I mean to tell you, you talk about sick. Because you didn't see anything but the sea was up here.
Right. Exactly.
Excuse me.
That's okay. In verse 14 there, there's a word being used to describe this storm, and it's not easy to pronounce, but let me see if y'all's translations agree. You might have a different word for this. It says, verse 14, mine says, "But before very long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called a Euroquillo."
Euroquillo.
Anyone have a different term?
The nor'easter.
It's a nor'easter. Anyone know what a nor'easter is?
Yeah. It happens all the time up and around New England.
Yeah, exactly. Did anyone ever see that movie? There's a movie that was out recently.
Perfect storm.
That's exactly right. It's about a nor'easter.
It says the hybrid word, half Greek and half Latin, meaning east, north, and standing for a treacherous east, northeast wind.
Yeah. And so these storms, particular storms, are known for just wiping out seafarers. And the Perfect Storm is a good movie about the encounter with a nor'easter.
There's no question that they survived this because of one reason.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Exactly. Let me take a look at verse 18. As a result of this storm, what do they start doing?
Tossing the jettison the cargo.
They start getting they start tossing it out. Then verse 20 says something very, very serious and ominous. What does verse 20 tell us?
Give up.
Yeah. Since neither sun nor stars appeared for how long?
3 days.
Can you imagine just not knowing any... That's how you told time in ancient
world. No navigation.
No idea what was going on, where you were at, completely tossed to and from, not knowing whether... It was pure terror. So much so... From then on, all, not some, but all hope of our surviving was gradually abandoned.
You know, I think that's a dramatic statement that it was dark, because I've been on Space Mountain with the lights on, and it's nothing. It's nothing with the lights on. You turn those lights off, it's a whole lot of time. And, you know,
Space
3 days at Disney
World. Oh.
Magic Kingdom. But when... And I think not just knowing the simple things. You know, to me, that means you can't hardly see the hand in front of your face if it's dark out. No stars, no anything.
Yeah,
that's dark.
Yeah.
Your eyes can adjust all day, but I wonder if you can even see. That is spooky.
And just a noise like a tornado all around you.
Any
constant up and down. Yeah.
What's in the water?
Right, exactly.
Where
are we,
hurt something.
Where are we going? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you don't know if you're in suspension. You don't know.
That's a great description.
You absolutely don't know. I mean, doubt, you don't believe. You probably are so scared you can't think.
Yeah. And like I said, it's gradually abandoned. In other words, they probably waited for the next day or just hoping, and just it never got better. And just finally just said, we're gone, we're dead. Just gave up.
You know, that's interesting. That's what God did to Paul on the road to Damascus. Took his sight away. There must be something about removing the senses of familiarity when God really wants your attention.
Yeah. Then he knows he's got you, and you know he's
sure.
Got
him. I lost vision in one eye for about 3 weeks, so I know what that's like.
Yeah. And you realize how much you take for granted what he's given us.
When
you
If I could just interject, I think this whole story about the storm, the fast preparation for the storm, where you have no idea what's going to go on, see the light at the end of the tunnel. Doesn't that sort of correlate with what's going on in society and the world today?
Mm-hmm.
God literally blinding those who really don't believe in Jesus Christ as a personal Lord and Savior, and can put all their trust and their hope in Him so that they can navigate through that storm of darkness. Obviously, we can see with our natural eyes, but nobody really has been tested at the point of, are they really seeing with their spiritual eyes? So, great.
But interesting enough, even though your entire identity is anchored and the Savior, you may still go through time like Luke did here,
right,
of not knowing.
No clue.
And your hope is gone, almost. I mean, Luke says, he's talking about us, and all hope of our, that's Luke, being saved was gone.
This is when salvation really means something.
That's exactly right.
This is where your faith is really the substance of the thing you're hoping for,
yeah,
and the evidence of the thing you haven't seen.
Right. Yeah, and that's part of our walk. You know, with God, he wants to know what we're made of. He doesn't do it by trips to Disney World. He does it by experiences like this. So let's go on here. Paul's offer of comfort. Could someone read? I'll go ahead and read. I'll read verses 21 through 27. When they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up in their midst and said, "Men, you ought to have followed my advice and not to have set sail from Crete and incurred this damage and loss. Yet now I urge you to keep up your courage. For there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night an angel of the God to whom I belong," I like that, "and whom I serve, stood before me, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you.'" Verse 25, "Therefore, keep up your courage, men, for I believe that God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told." Verse 26, "But we must run aground on a certain island. But when the 14th night came, as we were being driven about in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors began to surmise that they were approaching some land." So a lot of drama here, some serious drama. And so Paul basically gets to the point where they're so at a loss of any type of morale and hope that he says, "Look, I told you so." That's how it starts out. But he says in verse 23, well, what does he say in verse 23? What does he want to encourage them about? What happened that he wants to tell them?
Yeah. Angel.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually he talks about an angel coming to him. And I love how he says, an angel, not just an angel, but an angel of the God to whom I belong.
And whom I serve.
Yeah, so we don't just serve him, but we also belong to him. That's good. And the angel told Paul, don't be afraid. Why did he tell Paul not to be afraid?
Because they were without hope.
That's true. But he also told him a reason he shouldn't be afraid.
Because he got to go before Caesar.
That's right.
That was his ultimate decision.
This is what Jesus told him from the very get-go.
Exactly.
In the Damascus desert.
Right. Exactly.
And
when you first read 21, without going on, man, the first impression is, look, I told you so. I told you this was going to happen.
Yeah, right.
But to finish, he doesn't say that to gloat, but to say, I want you to remember what I did tell you. I have new message for you.
That's good.
To give the credibility.
Credibility.
What I said was true. This is going to be true.
Yeah. It's good.
You are going to hell. That's how I start out my conversation.
You have fun along the way.
There's hope for you yet.
Somebody gave me a birthday card. It was hysterical. It was like this black and white picture of this old nun in a Catholic school with this scowling. Just this picture of this nun, and then inside it said, "Enjoy your birthday, you're going to hell anyway."
Oh my God.
Funny.
Fear of the Lord is praise and love, but fear also brings it to the Lord. Is there a derivative both ways?
Absolutely.
That word? I mean,
it's a fear like a fear of electricity.
Yeah.
You know, it does great things for you, but also it's
zap you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until you, is it so that until you have fear, you really can't see well?
Yeah, and remember, we've talked about Proverbs before. Proverbs, the whole book of Proverbs is about this one key concept. There's only one definition of wisdom, making wise decisions, not intelligence, but wisdom. And what is wisdom?
The fear of the knowledge.
The fear of the Lord. That's all it is. It's not the knowledge of anything, it's fear of who he is. and recognizing who he is and having a reverential fear of him. And that is the source of all wisdom.
Yeah. So memory and thinking of sight, clarity. Think of the most, it's easy to think of some of the most tragic events in your life. And you have an imprint of that. Time yeah. seems to
never
slow
goes,
down.
Never goes away.
Yeah. So when you have that strong emotion, God has a way of getting our attention and making sure we never forget that.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so in verse 27, how it says how they were being just tossed about in the Adriatic Sea, which is right here between Crete and Italy. And so how long was this going on for?
14
nights.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they weren't eating because they tossed out a lot of food.
And they also threw up a lot of food.
That's exactly right. Quite dehydrated, emaciated, and depressed.
The end of their rope.
Yeah. So could someone read for us verses 28 through 39?
They took soundings and found that the water was 120 feet deep. A short time later, they took soundings again and found it was 90 feet deep. Fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. Well, I'll bet they did. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending that they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Then Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved." So the soldiers cut the ropes and let the lifeboat and let it fall away.
And then actually, could you go through 39?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. For the last 14 days, he said, "You have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head." After he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of all of them. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves, although there were 276 of us on board.
That's amazing. Right?
That's
yeah.
Luke again. When they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea.
Oh, and then verse 39 says, when the day came, they could not recognize the land, but they did observe a bay up with the beach, and they resolved to drive the ship right into it if they could. Thanks, Dave. So they see land. They see that there were, they didn't see it, but they could measure. They were getting close to land by taking these soundings. And so they got scared that they might crash on some rocks. And now remember, if you're on board the ship as a prisoner and even as Romans, you're probably watching the guys, the professionals, you know, kind of do all this stuff. And so Paul is observing the professionals. And what does Paul see the professionals do at verse 30?
Pretend.
Why?
Oh man, they're going to bail.
These guys are going to bail. These guys are low. But as the sailors were trying to escape from the ship, they let down the ship's boat, the lifeboat, basically, to the sea, on the pretense of intending to lay out anchors from the bow. Yeah, we're going to go do our job, and they were going to bolt out of there. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. And let everyone go down. And Paul sees it. And so what does Paul do when he sees it?
You better get on here. Or you
said to talk to the centurion.
You're going to die if you don't stay.
Sir? See these guys? And so he tells the centurions, they're not sailors. They don't know what these guys are doing. Paul clues them on, and so what do the centurions do right away? They basically cut the ropes for this, so these guys can't get away. And so they cut the ropes of all these lifeboats. They all, you know, you're on the ship. All the professionals are not, you know, everyone's staying on.
I'm not a sailor. You're not going anywhere.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so, verse 33, until the day was about to dawn. This is an all-night thing. I mean, these people aren't sleeping. Until the day was about to dawn, Paul was encouraging them. And what was he encouraging them?
Tea.
Yeah, and so what does Paul end up doing here?
Right, bread.
Yeah, so basically, you get them to eat. They decide to eat, and he offers a blessing.
And he gave thanks.
Yeah.
Openly.
And as a result of what Paul has done, what happens at verse 36? It's completely different than what we saw was going on before.
They were encouraged.
Despair.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? That's just another example of how you can minister to people. Fear is contagious. So is confidence. And a word, and Proverbs also talks a lot about the power of your words. Physical brute power is so inconsequential compared to the power of the spoken word. The words that you use on a daily, especially in your family. I got a good book I got to give some of you. It's an awesome book. It's called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. And it's given me a fear of how much power I have over my daughter. That I wouldn't have realized really otherwise without having someone tuning me onto this. Not just her life now, but how she will relate to God and to every other person for the rest of her life. And so don't ever forget the power for both for good and evil of every word. Jesus says we're going to give an account for every careless word that comes from our lips.
Mm-hmm.
So don't ever underestimate the power of the word, spoken word coming from your mouth. And Paul basically was able, through his encouragement, and these guys respected Paul because of the credibility he had, like Dr. Baumgartner said, that these guys saw this guy, he's projected that we're going to get saved. Here we're on land. Paul saw these guys trying to get away. He's helped us here. We feel good. This guy, we're confident. This guy's confident. We're confident. But
be honest with me. Haven't you, prior to verse 37, didn't you have in your mind that this was a smaller vessel?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was a handful of people.
Yeah.
Like in the dozens, maybe.
Yeah.
But when I got to that point earlier, studying
276
people.
It's like that's
a lot of folks.
That doesn't mean it's a big stateroom, though.
No. No, I realize that. But just the deck space alone and the girth of the boat
big
is a lot larger
vessel
than I visualized.
Yeah.
You had events like the Nina Pinta when it was here in the bay. That's the size boat that I had until I saw that many people.
Yeah. Huge. Big. Okay, so we're going to finish up our study here on time, believe it or not. Could someone finish up, actually, let me see here.
40 through 44.
Yeah, 40 through 44, and as you'll recognize, we have one more chapter of Acts to go, but we will not be done with the life of Paul, but we'll finish chapter 28 next week. But could someone finish up chapter 27, reading the last verses here, 40 through 44.
Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea, and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. The bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping, but the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first to get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or on pieces of the ship. In this way, everyone reached land in safety.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. So they basically pull out all the stops here. Verse 41 says, the ship struck a reef, and the stern began to break up. And once a ship starts to come apart, it's just a matter of time. It's almost like you can think of the Twin Towers when they were on fire like they were. You knew that the clock was running. It wasn't, they weren't going to stand much longer. And so verse 42, what does verse 42 tell us as a result of the shipwreck? What was going to happen?
They were going to kill the prisoners.
Yeah. Why?
You or me, Kate?
None of them should swim away and escape.
Now, you got to consider the brutality of the Roman Empire. The scope of the Roman Empire and how it did what it did. I'm actually watching a lecture on the Roman Empire, and this guy made a great point. The Roman Empire didn't become the Roman Empire by shaking hands and kissing babies. These guys conquered and blasted their way to conquest, to rule the inhabited world with brute force. And to get that kind of discipline, it has to take place at the level of each person. So why do you think these guys wanted to kill the prisoners instead of letting them go free?
They were afraid when they got back that they would be killed.
That's exactly right. Someone gets it. That's why the critics that try to say that, someone got Jesus out of the tomb when they put him in there, when there were Roman centurions. That would be crazy? No. If you were a Roman centurion responsible for someone and that person got away, you're a goner.
Failure was a destiny.
You don't live. And so, rather than let these guys, to save their own lives, they wanted to kill the prisoners. So, why doesn't Paul end up dead?
centurion stepped in. So
yeah,
his relationship or the kindness he was showing him the whole journey paid off.
They believed in him.
So much so they risked his own life for Paul.
Believed in him.
He really, you know, because if Paul got away, if Paul bolted, this guy would be a dead man, Julius. And so Julius was convinced enough about Paul's character and who Paul was that he convinced everyone else not to kill the rest of the prisoners.
And Paul was the representative of the Lord at the time, so...
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, and he already told him, I'm planning to go talk to Caesar. That's my plan.
Yeah.
Well, God's plan, but...
Yeah, exactly. So it's another example, I guess, of how your own stand for good can save other people's lives. Look, the righteousness of Paul saved people's lives.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And so they end up in the water, and they were all, first, or chapter 27 ends, and so it happened that they all were brought safely to land. Okay, so when we get together next week, we'll see that, you know, how Paul ultimately gets to Rome here. He makes it. But you can see it's quite a harrowing journey.
Do you have a map that's got Malta on it?
Yeah. Tim, I think what I'll do is I'll email you this map, which is the last journey, and you can email it out. So, yeah, this map I've got.
Okay. Maybe I've got it, too. I didn't realize it. I thought I'd...
I'll tell you, if you Google Middle East map, that one pretty much pops up under images almost right away.
Oh, yeah, I got it. That's a
Paul's
yeah, I see
journey.
It. I see it. Paul's yeah, spread of Christianity. Yeah, I got it under that. Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Okay. All right. Who's called Luke? Raise your hand.